Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer, growth on his back that he doesn't talk about, Williams.
Really need to vet a lot of these things you say in the intro with me a lot better.
Do you have a growth on your back?
No! This is a question that anyone should have.
We have a great show in store as we're going to be discussing the recently released film in theaters and on HBO Max, the James Wan horror film that just recently dropped, and that is Malignant. We got a couple thoughts in store, and honestly, I'm anxious to see where Spencer's at because we haven't talked about it, and Spencer doesn't call me during the day, so it's okay.
You want fresh takes. Everyone gets my fresh take right now.
Well, there we go. Okay, we're going to get a fresh take on this film and digest it and dissect it and do everything else to it that we can that's legal on the podcast. So before we do, Spencer, why don't you give them opening credits?
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got over 280 episodes. This is less than 285. We got a lot of stuff, man. So there's
300 is approaching.
It is, and we got something big in store, but you're going to have to tune in to figure that out. We got a lot of great stuff in store on our website, filmlosophers.com. Check it out. We got anything from anime to romance to action to comic books to everything. Also, check us out wherever you stream podcasts, and that is like Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora. We are everywhere, and check us out. Drop us a like. Drop us a follow. Let us know what you think. We want to know your thoughts. But speaking of thoughts, we are going to be turning our attentions towards, like we said, the recently dropped film on HBO Max from the illustrious James Wan, and that is Malignant. This movie has been kind of on the lips of a lot of people in terms of not just horror, but just kind of part of that emergence of coming out of the pandemic, so to speak, and, you know, getting back into the theaters. So this was one of those ones that was going to have both a dual release on HBO Max and in theaters. So so we got a chance to check it out, and I'm really excited to talk about it because I want to know what Spencer thinks. Plus, I have a couple of ideas on my own in terms of opinions and whatnot. So before we do, Spencer, why don't you go ahead and give us the official synopsis goodness?
Madison is paralyzed by shocking visions of grisly murders, and her torment worsens as she discovers that these waking dreams are in fact terrifying realities.
That's right. Directed by the illustrious James Wan, from a screenplay by Kella Cooper based on an original story by Wan, Ingrid Bisou, and Cooper, the film stars Annabelle Wallace, Maddie Hassan, George Young, Michelle Brianna White, and Jacqueline McKenzie. For some reason, I almost said Jake Quellen. I don't know why. I was literally about to say Jake Quellen. Too much Key and Peele, I think.
It's no such thing, man.
Malignant was actually originally scheduled to be released in the United States on August 14th of 2020. By Warner Brothers Pictures, but obviously due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the film was removed from the release schedule in March of 2020 and dropped about September 10th of 2021. So, this movie has a lot of different things going on, and I want to dive into a lot of that as time goes on within the show, but. First thing is that it's kind of really, it's almost like putting on a new shirt, like the first horror movie of the spooky season is this one, and honestly, it was very much like the idea of it was well received. Like actually sitting down during the fall and watching a horror movie at the right time. It's like kind of like when people like to sit down with their families and watch Christmas movies in December.
Mm, okay.
You know, that's kind of the way it felt for me. I don't know how you feel around this time when it comes to movies or whatnot. And I know we've repeatedly stressed this enough. Spencer is a newfound horror movie fan, very fresh into the likings of certain horror films and whatnot. And it was about three. I don't even know if we were able to date it yet. Did we ever figure out when that was? Was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago?
I think it's 3 years ago.
Okay, so we started you started getting you into horror movies as of 3 years ago. It looks like you're thinking.
I'm just gonna look it up.
That'd be a good idea, because but the fact is that the air is getting crisp, the leaves are turning brown, the masked men with knives are hiding behind every corner. It is a wonderful time of the season. Mm-hmm. And I am just super excited that we're going to now start getting all these horror movies to just start dropping in the fall season. We got this movie, we got Halloween Kills, we got, I mean, just everything seems to be going on. We got VHS 94, bunch of movies, which ironically enough, you got a chance to see the first VHS the other day.
Like that movie.
What? I mean, it's a little rough around the edges because it's the first one, but still.
It just feels disjointed and disconnected. Also, I think I might have walked in on you watching part of it, but because, like, oddly enough, like, certain sections of that movie felt very familiar, but other sections, no, I'd never seen before.
Really?
Yeah, it was very odd.
I hope that's what I was watching. So talking about this movie, obviously this dropped during the earlier part of the month, and a lot of people got a chance to review it early. The unique thing about this movie is that it is one of the films that we get a chance to see James Wan return to horror in, because we haven't seen him do much. I don't think he was the one who did Spiral. Do you know if he did Spiral?
I do not. See, I was just looking at this tab and then I closed.
No, it was Darren Lynn Bousman. So, but knowing that James Wan kind of cut his teeth getting into the major market with the Saw films.
Okay.
This is one of those movies where when you saw the movie Saw, it kind of changed the name of the game for not just captive horror, but in general, kind of the idea of creating a complicated villain. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Have you seen the Saw movies?
I've seen a couple of them.
Did you at least see the first one?
Yes.
Okay. So then you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
With Jigsaw.
I like that first one. The first one was good.
Oh yeah. It was really good. And transitioning over to this one, as we get that return to horror kind of opening, I kind of want to get your opinion, Spence, right off the bat. Had you seen any trailers for this movie at all?
I'd only seen the poster, literally yet. So I came in with maybe at some point something would be going into someone's eye, but that's pretty standard for these types of movies.
Oh,
so.
From the poster,
yeah,
Yeah. I mean, the poster doesn't give much in terms of the actual storyline.
Right.
And the trailer is like a small piece of this larger, massive pie. Because, like, you think the trailer gives you one thing and it's like, oh, okay, maybe it's about this. And it's total, you know, it's, and mind you, we're going to get into spoilers because, to be quite frank, it's available everywhere. I mean, you know. If you intended to watch it, you would already seen it by now.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't intend to watch it or you're still thinking about it, you're probably not gonna. But if we could persuade you, it's very interesting in terms of the premise. So before we jump into any of the meat of this review, Spencer, did you have any expectations coming into this movie?
No, I only see a poster.
Well, I know, but like knowing it's, did you know at least it was from James Wan?
No, I didn't know anything else. The poster. That's it.
That's all you saw.
That's all I knew.
Okay. So you.
What kind of expectations did you have? Because you knew at least who directed it.
Yeah. aside from knowing that James Wan was, you know, attached to it, like my biggest expectations were, okay, this was going to be a horror movie. I was hoping that it wasn't like a rehashing of any other film he did before. Mm-hmm. Not to say that that's something that he's done before. Like, you know, he's just recycling. He's not a Michael Bay. He doesn't recycle stuff just for the sake of getting butts in seats. But my concern, my expectations were this was going to be a different kind of horror movie. Or at least this was going to be a special enough horror movie in itself that was going to just, I don't know, I guess wow me? You know, you see things that are attached to the name like James Wan. James Wan has, like I said, has made a name not only for what he did with Saw, but what he did with The Conjuring, what he did with like the Annabelle movies, what he did with Aquaman. He directed the first Aquaman movie. You know, Juan has had he even was the showrunner, I believe, for the recently rebooted
Archive 81. Is that what you're talking about?
No. What's the name of that? The guy who builds things out of nothing.
MacGyver.
I think he was the showrunner, I want to say.
Well, as for director, he directed one episode of MacGyver.
Was it the first one at least?
I don't know. Specify, it just says The Rising.
Okay. That tells me a lot.
Yes, it was the first
episode. It was the first episode. Okay, yeah. He talked about directing. So he directed the first one. He kind of brought that whole, you know, I guess, setting for it. I wasn't a big MacGyver fan. When I was in San Diego Comic-Con the year before that show came out, they had us do like a table sit down with a lot of the directors and a lot of the folks, and I got a chance to sit with James Wan.
Okay.
And we talked obviously MacGyver, but other things came up, like, you know, when are we gonna do the next Saw movie or whatever. Like, everybody had questions. But never in my mind had I had any idea that he was gonna do something like this movie. And for good reason, too, because it wasn't just him who created the idea behind this. Ingrid Bisou, one of the showrunners and one of the executive producers, or one of the writers and the executive producer, I don't know if you know this, she also played the crime scene girl, the one who kind of had a crush on
her.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I didn't know if you knew that, but she was also... She had a bigger role than just being in the film as like the love struck crime scene technician or whatever.
Okay.
So, I think all that to say, I expected a lot, I guess, because it was James Wan, but at the same time, you know, it's going on HBO Max, and I still don't know how I feel about that, you know,
about the fact that things are just going on HBO Max.
Well, the fact that they're releasing it on the streaming platform and in film, which means like, okay, so there's like a 50-50 chance you could either watch it at home or you could watch it in the theater. So if you know the likelihood of people actually wanting to see this movie are just going to want to watch it in their own home because they're already paying for HBO Max, why put it in theaters? And then it makes you wonder, like, okay, is there like something wrong with the movie or whatever? Like, not to say that HBO Max has bad quality films. It's just to say, like, it's kind of that suspect.
Well, that's because I think in normal times, this would be a huge red flag. Because just putting it instantly on a streaming service without, like, a theatrical release attached or even simultaneously doing it, like, that just, like, shows, like, low confidence that this movie could, like, drive a turnout.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, with the pandemic and everything, you know, it was kind of a promise they made when things weren't looking as they do now.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you probably don't want to go into a theater with people. So the rest of the year, we'll promise that.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe it's just like me holding on to like old mindsets or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, plus they couldn't go back on it now. They already said, hey, yeah, every major movie we're doing this year will be on HBO Max. And if they had backtracked on that, it would have been bad for them.
No, 100%. Warner Brothers would be like apologizing up the wazoo. It would have been like 3 years instead of just 1 year. So, jumping into first impressions about this movie. I think I'm going to let you go first because I feel like you have a lot more to say. And I don't want to take anything that you're going to say and you not say anything. So, I want to hear everything you got. So, first impressions as soon as the movie was over.
This movie is all over the place. Like, it is both at sometimes very smart with what its characters do,
yeah,
and then other times very, very dumb. Like, I've never seen like a movie be this spastic with like,
yeah,
people like, oh, someone broke into my house, I'm going to board up my house and put in deadbolts. Smart decision. Oh, I'm a police officer, I'm going to chase after this guy in like this unknown sector, not call for backup, just be on my own.
You've been playing too much Mass Effect, by the way. You said sector.
Like, I don't know what, like, sector of a city. City sectors.
Just a part of the city. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Call me out.
No, I hear you, though. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just, like, it was a lot, man. You know, like the longer the movie went on, the more issues I took with, like, people, like, either ignoring noises and, like, part of what the characters in this movie do,
yeah,
are part of the reason why I ignored horror movies for so long.
Oh my god.
Because like it really gets into that thing where like it's all about basic law. Like if you hear a noise and you like know something is out like killing people, mm-hmm, like it's time to leave. Like, and when one person did it, I was like, finally, thank you. So like,
who did that?
It was the sister. Like when she, for some reason, decided to go up to the.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, but then so she heard a noise and she's like, nope, and just picked up and left. Like that was probably one of the smarter things she did.
Yeah.
Besides, like, say that her sister was possibly psychic to the police.
True. And I that is true.
What were some of your first impressions?
So my first impression of the film was, why the heck does HBO Max not work? Because my movies stopped twice at very key scenes, and I'm like, oh crap, wait. What do you mean? What do you mean error? What do you mean this title cannot play right now? Like, HBO Max, I don't know if you play favorites with certain streaming devices. Maybe it works best on like Apple TV or whatever, but HBO Max seems to be like the most clunkiest streaming platform, or at least the interface.
Mm-hmm. Not it.
Is so clunky and cumbersome. I push down to go to Malignant, and it drops down into, do you want to see The Sopranos? I'm like, no, I don't want to see The Sopranos.
Oh, let's talk about that for one quick second. Like, I know this is not about HBO Max, but it is. Okay, so the movie finished, right? And so, like, I'm back at the title screen, and, like, I back out to, like, the main menu, but it's still on the Malignant thing. I just see rows of movies. All of a sudden, music starts playing. I'm like, what is happening? Why am I hearing something? Is my device closed? It started playing The Sopranos like preview. I couldn't even see it anymore. I had to scroll up just to get it to stop.
It's so janky. It's so janky. Like I was at probably, because this movie is about an hour and 51 minutes long. I was about an hour and 20 minutes in. Right around that part where she's at that, you know, that hospital, the sister.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not a great place.
Right, and I missed something because it stopped. It paused. And mind you, I had the subtitles on, so I could hear everything and make sure I didn't miss anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, it just stopped. It's like noise rattles. I'm like, I don't hear nothing. And I look and it's just pausing. Those three little dots are going across the screen. And I'm like, are you serious right now? Are you serious? And then it did it again at the police station. And I'm like, for real? Seriously? It was like the movie, HBO Max is like the worst kind of car salesman. Because you can buy a car from a sleazy car salesman and the car will drive off the lot. In fact, the car may even last about a week or two, but then you're driving down the road and then boom, your engine blows up or something and you're like, what the heck? And then you look at the paperwork and it's like, oh, is it as is by, meaning you can't take it back to the dealer. So it's like, what am I doing here? And then it works for all of a sudden and you're like, okay, I can make this work. And then it stops again. If HBO Max didn't have all this unique content like from Warner Brothers and all that, or Studio Ghibli, like if it didn't
when they announced that, I was so angry.
Yeah,
like I was like, why here?
It's of all places, why? I have a hate love hate relationship with HBO Max right now. I try to watch as little as possible on there now because this isn't the first time this has happened. I think I was watching like Terminator. I was watching something on there one time and it stopped in the middle of the movie. It killed the app. It totally closed out on my TV. This wasn't like on a laptop or anything.
Oh.
Yeah. And it just put me back into like my TV's home screen. And I'm like, so I guess I'm going to YouTube. Okay. But that was my first impression. Like, I was like, forget you. Like, screw you, HBO Max. This almost pushed me to say the next WB movie I'll just watch in theaters,
which is the craziest thing. Okay, this is my last story on this subject before we move on.
I don't know if it'll be the last of mine.
Okay, so I remember there was one. I was trying to watch something on HBO Max. Right, I was on my like Android TV, was playing. All of a sudden, just freaked out, and like I closed the app. I restarted my whole thing. Would not like going back into the movie. I had to like use my phone to like Chromecast it over to my TV to make it work.
I've done that too. Like, why does it work better on my phone than on my TV? My TV is just a giant phone. Like, literally. That was my first impression. Immediately after that, I was like, what did I just watch? Like, I appreciated the efforts of James Wan, but you know, WTF, you know, what kind of chaotic mess did I just get served? And we'll get into a lot of those specifics in a bit. And mind you, this is, as I stated, a spoiler review. We're not going to give everything away, but the good portion that we are going to talk about, we're going to have to spoil some things. So yeah, this is your warning. And with that, I want to kick off, like, what police station do these people work at? Like,
where they don't train anyone on proper handing of weapons.
It's like they took the police station from Blade Runner 2049, dumbed it down as much as they could, and still it looked like this is not a police station. Like, this is absolutely a set. Like, why do you constantly have these lights going through these, like the police lights in there? Or why is there sparks in the garage where you're parking the police cars? Like, I just didn't get the settings at certain points in time. Like, everything else, certain parts made sense, but it wasn't until like things got like spooky when things were starting to get like tense that you're like, where are we right now? Like, are you trying to sell me that this is not a house? Because this definitely doesn't feel like a house anymore. The house in the movie never once felt real unless it was daytime. Every other time, the way the fog was, the way the house was set up, the way, like, just things worked in that house, I was like, number one, that's a really nice house.
It's too nice, actually.
Like, not
too nice for like two people in this really weird relationship.
Yeah, where it's obvious one of them doesn't work.
Yeah,
because he's like, he's home and he's just laying there watching MMA.
Yeah,
I'm gonna skip over the acting first because I want to talk about the story.
Okay.
This story started out really well.
Yes.
Like,
this beginning, very strong.
Yeah. Like, the way this movie started with the hospital and everything, and then even the opening with the relationship and kind of establishing their dynamic, I'm like, all right, you go into some, like, really, really, like, troubling spaces for mm-hmm. this movie. I get it. I can dig it. Let's see where it goes. And then Undertaker shows up and comes in with his big black cloak and starts wreaking mayhem. And at certain points, you're like, wait, what? Like, is that supposed to happen? And the story gets kind of disjointed a bit. Like, I appreciate, like I was saying earlier, I appreciate the efforts of James Wan. I appreciate the fun that he tried to maybe, like, subconsciously, maybe unaware, that he slipped into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because throughout this movie, there were points that I was like, this is happening. Okay. Like, and mind you, they were not points where I think that were meant to be like that, but I was like, all right, we're going there. Between the dynamic between the wife, the main character, and her husband was really a odd transition to go from talking about, like, spousal abuse
mm-hmm.
to, oh my God, I forgot her name again. What the heck was the name of the sister?
Is it Sydney?
Is it Sydney?
I think so, because I pulled up a list of the cast, and she seems likely to be the sister, because, like I'm sure they said her name, but, like...
Sydney, yeah, you're right.
Like, I don't remember anyone in this movie being called Sydney.
No. Like, to go from that to, like, this really super, like, intense scene of the sister, which is the main character played by Madison, Madison... played by Annamelle Wallace, and the sister, Sydney, who is played by Maddie Hassan, where they're sitting on the bed, and she's just like, she's talking about wanting to have, like, this blood relationship or blood connection with somebody, like having a kid. And I'm like, you could just say you want to have a baby. Like, that's okay. You don't have to say, like, I mean, if you want a blood pact, I'm pretty sure you could find somebody on Craigslist, but still, like, and then it hypes up that moment to where she's like, Sydney, I'm adopted. And it's like Maddie's like responding like she just told her, I'm also the spawn of Satan. Like, wait, what is happening here? Like, am I supposed to take this scene for real? And it's instances like that that make me feel like I don't know how serious James Wan intended on some of these scenes to be, like, received.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, there's a couple scenes where I'm just like, this is not scary. This is kind of fun and funny at the same time.
Yeah, pretty much anything that involves her sister, except for when her and her mom are watching, like, those tapes from, like, the hospital later on, is kind of leaning into comedy for the most part.
Yeah, oh yeah. Because you get the scene where the sister, who apparently is an actress or something to that effect.
Yeah.
She is kind of slightly flirting with the detective and talks about, like, you know, oh, can't we just bring in a psychic to prove this? I mean, don't you guys believe in this kind of stuff? Because, you know, I worked on a TV show one time, and I'm like, I know a few actors. I don't think any of them would use their actual on-screen personas to give any credibility to a statement said in real life.
Oh.
Like, I once flew as Peter Pan in a movie, so I know what I'm talking about when I say I know gravity. Like, no, you don't. Sorry. And the dynamic between the two detectives.
Oh my gosh. Like, these two detectives, they constantly feel like discount cops, like, to me throughout this whole movie. And, like, I'm not sure what it is that, like, I'm picking up from both of them, but, like, I'm not buying that they're cops. Especially, like, with the guy cop, like, going back to him, like, chasing people. Like, he was holding, like, a flashlight in the weapon in a way I've never seen actors do before. which is just holding them. Like, I feel like no one told him it's like you have to like cross your hands for like stability sometimes when you're like chasing. Because I like what other actors do in other things, and it just comes across as weird when you don't see it, you know?
Yeah, and like, have you seen Criminal Minds?
No.
Oh my god. Did you ever see Dharma and Greg?
I know the show.
Well, the main actor in Dharma and Greg is the same guy. Yeah. This seemed like a discount him as a detective and a discounted Wanda Sykes.
Yes, I thought it too.
I'm like,
for a quick second, I was like, Wanda? Oh, no.
I was like, yeah, for a second, I was like, is that Wanda Sykes? They get Wanda Sykes in the next James Wan movie? And mind you, it's not to discredit her work in the film. It's just that, like, from every kind of major tick to every comedic, like, beat, she was trying to make that comedic persona work.
Mm-hmm.
And
I should have just put Wanda Sykes
in. They should have just put Wanda Sykes. There's just so much about this film that you're watching, and then you're in it, and then you're like, you're out of it.
Yeah,
like it's not even a point where you're aware. You're just watching, and then wait, are we out of the film? I think I'm out of the film. Like you just feel like you got booted. It's like watching HBO Max. It's like you're in the. You're in the middle of the movie, and then it just boots you out. You're like, oh, I don't think this is part of the movie. Oh, HBO Max is crashing. Oh, my God.
Actually, one of the things that booted me out of the movie was, like, a song choice. Because as we played in the intro to this episode, Where's My Mind pops up. But it has none of the words. It's just the music. And while I was watching this in my play, it's like, I was like, is that Where Is My Mind? Mm-hmm. Like, I like rewound it because I was like, I think that's what this song is. And I just so I could hear it again. I was like, I'm fairly certain they did this. And then because of that song, I was like, wait a minute, is this what the movie's about? And then I started to figure out what the movie was about. Just
because. You figured out the movie based on the cover song.
Yeah.
And it's God, HBO Max sucks. Because, like, I did that too, but I rewinded it, and it stopped, and it froze. It didn't kick me out, but it froze. I had to wait, like, 40 seconds for it to resume the movie. You know what? Maybe HBO Max made it hard to keep consistent in the film. I don't know.
It could be partially that.
Now here's the kicker. I have to admit that the idea of this movie is pretty unique. You know, the main storyline, like if you took the story element and just kind of presented it outside of like with the actors and everything,
mm-hmm.
It's a pretty sound story. I mean, you have this girl, this woman who was attacked by this unknown assailant, kills her husband, almost to an extent frames her for that murder, and then she is now like psychically getting visions of these other killings done by that same assailant, tries to explain it, come to find out she has a dark past herself, there's a connection between her and the killer, everybody's trying to figure it out, it culminates in this climactic third act, and you have to figure out a way to, the both of them, Madison has to figure out a way for the killings to stop and how to get rid of this serial killer, the psychopath. And so that's a really great premise. You know, I mean, you don't really see that as much. In fact, it kind of hails towards like 80s horror movies where, you know, psychics were more prominent in film. Even going back to like with stuff that James Wan has done. I mean, you look at The Conjuring, movies like that, or even I think he did Insidious. Did he do Insidious?
Yeah, I think he did a few of them.
I believe so. Yep, he did Insidious. Somewhere in here. But the fact is that those movies, they incorporate a spiritual element into their films like that, to where there's this unique connection with the other side, And that kind of carries over into this one, which is kind of funny if you think about it, that Sydney kind of makes that mention, and it kind of plays on like, oh, well, you know, James Wan has had other actors play psychics in his movies, so, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of a meta joke. But the film itself, once you incorporate that story with the actors and then the filming style and the beats that it hits, it's kind of like, what am I watching? Like, I don't know if I can keep up with everything going on. And talking about the acting, let's kind of dive into that. Like, with the first major obvious actress, Annabelle Wallace, playing Madison. So here's the thing. I think she did a decent enough job with what she was given. Mm-hmm. I think that's the kicker there. You know, she was given this script and then given direction to act a certain way. I think the majority of the screen time that I've seen with this woman is she's screaming or crying out loud.
Yeah.
Because she wakes up screaming. She is screaming in slow motion. She's like...
She's screaming and it's silent.
She's screaming and it's silent. I think I've seen more of this woman in pain on screen than I have actually seen her in dialogue. Oh. But the efforts that she makes in this film to maintain the consistency of the film, I think she does a good effort. I feel like it hails back to the execution, if you will, in terms of direction. Same thing with like Sydney, the sister. She's in it for minimal amount of time in terms of acting efforts, but they're given with, you know, they're working with what they were given, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't really much to say about the detectives. Detective Kakoa Shaw, which is a very interesting name to have. Kakoa Shaw. I mean, they're in Seattle, so I get it. Like, you know, they're wanting to show diversity, but...
Like, honestly, I didn't have subtitles on, so when he said Kakoa Shaw, I thought that was, like, his whole last name.
Like Kakoa Shaw.
Yeah.
Like, Detective Kakoa Shaw.
Yeah.
That actually may have made sense. Like, what is... Even at one point, like, the crime scene tech has, like, a short name for him, like, a nickname. It's, like, K or... And I'm like, how do you get K out of Kakoa Shaw? Like, are we just talking about the first letter? Okay, mm-hmm. Just...
She doesn't want to say Kakoa.
And then that, there was no believability in that entire department.
No, like
that
entire none of them.
Like from the guy who apparently ages people so that way they can figure out like what adults look like. He's probably the most mismanaged, disorganized member of that police force. You have a murder spree going on. Someone gives you something attached to that murder spree to get it to you ASAP, and you don't make mention of it. You don't notify him. You don't shoot him an email. There, like, was no proper protocol there at all. And mind you, yes, I get it. It's a movie.
Okay, but come on.
Yeah.
People have, like, even in old movies, people have inboxes. Like, just put it on in. Don't just throw something on someone's desk that they're going to shuffle into a whole bunch of other crap.
Yeah, especially if they're like, apparently these detectives were like super busy all the time because they had stacks of stuff on their desk. So, but he seemed like if there was ever a frustrating point in the movie, it was him. Because I'm like, I'm looking at him and you think, okay, he's, you know, he's either... working as a tech or whatever, but then towards the tail end he comes out with a gun. Where the heck you got a gun from? I'm like, you're just good with Adobe, dude. Why do you have a gun? Like, it just,
you know, we're arming our Adobe techs. Everyone in the police office needs a gun, apparently,
including the sketch artists and everything. Yeah. Okay, you know, touch my pencil, I dare you. And just but that, yeah, that police department was just something else. I just couldn't believe it at all. Yeah. Even at the end when there's this big old fight in the...
Oof, no, that did not make any sense whatsoever. Because it's like these people like learn from the, okay, yes, we all fight the opponent one at a time and we don't like use our heads and like simultaneously attack. No, just picks everyone off one by one and...
Yeah.
Also, going back to earlier in this like whole jailhouse scene.
Yeah.
Like there's a portion where Madison is in the jail because they suspect her of doing something, and she is able to like murder all of those people in that jail, and nobody comes to check.
No,
like there's a whole bunch of screaming.
There's no guard. There's no cameras. There's no like. There's no any kind of like standby people, which I get it. It's a jail, but for as large as that police station is, this is not Mayberry. You know, Barney Fife isn't just sitting on a chair waiting for something to happen. Like this is a big enough police department where there should be. And that jail cell was huge.
Yeah, that seemed like way too many people in just one thing. Like,
yeah.
You kind of want to separate people a little bit just so this specific thing doesn't happen.
Yeah. It just that whole... Everything about the police department just didn't work for me.
So weird.
I'm trying to think who else stuck out. Like, because there's not many people that stick out in this movie. You really just have your main characters who are the focus... Oh, I didn't know this. So the woman who instigates in the jail cell, the white woman, she's actually a really well-known stunt performer. Her name's Zoe Bell. It's really odd that she looked like that, but okay. I'm hoping that was just like, I just say it. She looked kind of scary in that movie.
Everyone looks scary in that like, scene.
But I mean, everything from like everything felt basic in this movie, like basic level. You know, they did a casting call in Saskatchewan, Wisconsin or something or someplace, you know, and got a bunch of people and then threw in a few slightly bigger names to work in the movie as well. So needless to say. Everything kind of hung on the shoulders of the main actress, which is Annabelle Wallace, which I don't know if she should have been the one to carry this whole movie by herself, but it kind of felt like it.
I mean, I feel like it's more of a problem of her character and what the character was forced to do than the actress. Because, like, based on, like... I don't know what someone else could have done to make it better based on what they had to do in this movie, you know? Like, because, like, it's mostly just her being sad about, like, legitimate things that happened and then her screaming and then people ignoring her. Like, that's kind of her role in this movie.
Yeah,
and
I don't really
know how you fix that with, like, even if you got, like, someone who was, like, a great actress. I don't know how they'd fix that.
Now, mind you, there are... The different beats this movie hits, some of them hit, some of them don't. Like, for instance, there's a scene earlier on in the film where she's at this point alone in the house. Or is she? No, she's alone in the house and she's like folding clothes or she's looking out the window for some reason. I think she just got out of the shower and she looks out the window and like where the street light is, it's on. And then it starts flickering and then it goes out and you see the shape and the music builds. And it's a very, very well put together scene because, you know, it looks like he's walking towards her from across the street. And then all of a sudden, you know, the light comes back on and he disappears. And I thought that was a really cool beat. Like that beat really did feel like it put me on edge. Like, oh, my God. Oh, yeah. You got to do something.
Yeah.
And certain parts in the first half.
Yeah. This is when she's at her best.
Yeah. In the first half of the movie, a lot of the beats where she hits and a lot of the beats where the movie tries to create this sense of fear and dread with the antagonist, they really work well together. You know, even the first kill that happens, that first kill had me like totally unsure about what this entity is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to a certain point where it's like, oh, it's just an emo kid. You know, you get to this point where it's this thing that's in a trench coat that walks awkwardly. And by the second half of the movie, I was struggling to believe in the terror of the movie. It made it hard to stay in the film now that you kind of broke through that threshold and realized the tangibleness of the villain, that this villain is capable of like getting hurt and things like that. Because most of the time when you look at movies like this, you think, okay, it's like a spirit or an entity or some type of, mm-hmm. you know, troubled or tortured soul attached to this child or whatever. Like, you think this is what it is. And it's manifested itself in some way because, you know, her husband beats her. And now she's just, you know, letting out the anger or whatever. Like, you think, okay, cool. And then when the film reveals what it actually is, and how it uses her, you're kind of like, and mind you, this is probably spoiler territory, but I'm like, huh, it's Quato from Total Recall. I was like, hey, I haven't seen you since on Mars. Like, it felt. Like, it felt like it was trying to touch on, like, it was trying to touch on the 70s or 80s horror, which, as I mentioned, Total Recall kind of plays in that in terms of, you know, who Quato is. And if you haven't seen it, then don't worry. Nothing's been spoiled. But the idea of something like that and how it's presented, it's kind of that psychosomatic fear of like the unknown, the most unknown or uncontrollable part of your existence is how you're born, I guess, or the way you're born. So it creates a lot of that within you, and you're like, okay. I could give it enough kudos to say, okay, I can see where you're trying to reach, mm-hmm. but no. Like, it didn't fully hit that. I mean, what did you think when, and without giving any spoilers, what did you think when you got to that point in the movie, if your HBO Max was still working?
I was able to watch the movie just fine, actually, this time. So the best way I can say it is, when we got to the point where it's like revealing what's really going on, I was like, this makes a choice earlier in the movie make entire sense, because earlier in the movie, the husband, like, pushes her against the wall, and she is bleeding pretty badly on her, like, head. And she does not go to the hospital.
No.
And she, like, wakes up from sleeping with a pool of blood on her pillow. And I was like, you're pregnant right now. What do you think? What are you doing? Like you are risking both of your lives right now. And I was like, this is such a crazy decision. Why would they ever do this? And it's because if she did go to the hospital, the whole movie wouldn't happen.
It would be a very short film.
Yeah.
Ma'am, do you know you have this on the back of your head? Dump, 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 dump. Like the whole, like, you know, directed by Dick Wolf or something. Yeah. Like, it would like literally end the movie right there. And it makes you wonder, like, did at any point in time, did she ever get like a physical as a kid, or did she ever go to like this is somebody who was a child at one point in time. Mm-hmm. Like, did she ever get hurt? Did anybody ever check her head? Did anybody ever rub the back of her head just to like caress and just love on her?
That would have been fine because like
yeah. it just you're right. She was pregnant. She's got a pool of blood on her pillow because of her husband cracking her head on the wall, which, mind you, how low of a level of scumbag did James Wan want this actor to go as playing the husband? Because he was pretty low.
Like, this guy, like, he's barely in the movie, but, like, he leaves a lasting impression. You're just like, well, bye. Like, I'm glad you kind of died because you were awful.
That, by the way, that guy is the same guy who played the son of Hermes in a Percy Jackson movie.
Oh, okay.
So I literally was looking at him, and then that first 10-15 minutes, I'm like, I know him from somewhere. And I was going through, was it Hunger Games? No. It was a YA movie. I know that much. But yeah, I think everybody kind of gave a collective, "You deserve that," yeah. Like in that movie, in that scene.
Nobody was sad to see him.
No, nobody at all. But talking about, because we talked about the actors, but the acting itself, it really seemed like some of it was really dramatic. Mm-hmm. But as I said too, like there was a sense of kind of dialing back towards movies like from the 70s and 80s, which, I mean, mind you, back then there was no kind of bar that was set, because they were setting that bar for what was to be expected for horror movies for the rest of time. You take a look at anything from like Italian horror to like from Dario Argento and all them to even modern more American horror, like, you know, Friday the 13th or, you know, Halloween. You take a look at these types of movies, and a lot of them have that kind of same thing where you have over the top performances to really sell the fear, I guess, and the dread, which, mind you, has been made fun of several times over throughout the modern years. You take a look at, have you ever seen that movie Paranorman?
Yeah, yeah.
So you remember that opening scene where Norman's watching that movie, the zombie movie, with his grandma, and the zombie's like taking his sweet time to get to her, and she's like screaming, and then she stops and looks at the camera like, "Oh," and then she keeps screaming. like people have made fun of that, and I feel like that is kind of a testament to the horror movies of old. Mm-hmm. Now you look at this movie, and in a certain light, you could say this movie pulls or draws from that to create that sense of fun, I guess. Fun's a very odd way to say it, but like you create that sense of just, I guess, homage to a certain extent of movies that we've seen previous. You know, movies where like Scream Queens are very prominent. Jamie Lee Curtis, who's made a name for herself as a Scream Queen, you know. People like the final girl in the original Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, the final girl in Friday the 13th, you know, all these final girls, all these individuals who add a little bit of over the top. Like we were mentioning earlier, actually, you and I were talking off air about Trolls 2, and that whole scene where he's like, "They're eating her, and then they're gonna eat me." Oh my god,
quoting that movie just makes me laugh.
Like it's hilarious because it's over the top, and like the zoom ins of the camera and everything. And there were certain scenes in this movie where it's like, okay, I see what you're driving towards, or at least I can see where there's inspiration from. But this is where, talking with you, do you think that this was more along the lines of like an homage at certain points, or do you think it just was bad acting? Like even the idea of like the two cops, like you take a look at movies like Child's Play. Child's Play has Christopher Sarandon, Prince Humperdinck from Princess Bride. him and then his partner, and they're detectives, and Chris Sarandon is like this hard-nosed detective who's trying to figure out, he's trying to catch this killer. He's eluded him, and he's trying to find him, and he starts seeing like all the craziness that's happening, and his partner doesn't believe it, and he's like, "Oh, whatever, blah blah blah, like, oh, you know, it's a doll, man, it's just a doll." Like that was kind of the sentiment I was getting with these two here.
Yeah.
And in a certain extent, because in this movie Detective Kakoa Shaw actually comes into contact with the entity that the movie calls Gabriel. Mm-hmm. And has like a go at it, where you were mentioning earlier, in a very unknown part of the city, a very unknown sector, as you Thank so you. Aptly called it.
Use the proper words.
You're welcome. Yeah, whatever. but and so he has an experience with it. But at the same time, you have the other detective, who is Detective Regina Moss or whatever, who is kind of playing that like, "Are you for real? Are you really buying into this? I told you." Blah, 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 blah. And it's things like that you're like, you have to ask the question, is it true homage in this sense, or is this kind of senseless overacting? This is what I'm wondering from you.
Yeah, see, it could be both.
Oh, it could be.
Because it could be like, you know, oh, yes, I would like to do homage. And then, like, it's not, the actors aren't quite conveying what they need to. But, like, if it's not both, then it's more on the side of just, like, bad acting choices, specifically from our lead cops.
Do you think in this film, are there more homages? Are there more bad acting situations?
I'm going to go with bad acting situations. Like, I'd have to hear, like, a director's commentary.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, well, yeah, this is...
I looked on HBO Max, and I was looking for a director's commentary, and it said it's too early to watch HBO Max, and it shut off. So I was like, okay, whatever. I wanted to find the opportunities in this movie where, if it was going to create those senses of homages, like even some of the scenes where, like, even some of the scenes where they were showing the house, like the layout, it was very almost Omen-esque, like kind of the way they were zooming over, and you could see, like, from one room where you were watching, and it was a really great set. Like, if that was practically done, I would say that was a really cool set. Mm-hmm. How you could see the bottom floor from up top, and then you kind of the camera pans and you see the upper floor and the upper rooms, and then it pans over and, like, you could see the layout of the house architecturally from that point of view. Very, I don't know if you ever saw Philip Seymour Hoffman's movie Synecdoche, New York, but it's essentially about a man who creates pretty much this portion of New York in this large warehouse, and you could see, there were just scenes where you could see the layout of the house because it was essentially a set. Mm-hmm. But it was very cool. And I thought that was really well done and really kind of reminiscent of how older horror movies used to use really large houses. Like, it just was like the emptiness and the eeriness of such a large space created more dread. So you're like, okay, cool. Like, I get it. I get what you're trying to do. Even the scene where, and spoiler alert, where you come to find out that the killer has been hiding in her upstairs attic the entire time, with this woman who he held captive, random woman, you have no clue who she is. Like, that was like super like Black Christmas. Even like the people under the stairs to an extent. It had that, like, when a stranger calls, oh, you know, you got to get out, the killer's in the house, like that kind of thing. It had that sense to it. But then, unfortunately, like for that particular scene, it's kind of broken by, like, the slow motion movement of, like, watching her scream again. And it's like, okay, so she's gonna scream because of this happening. Okay. because it's just, it's such a random situation that happens, but to have it transition with that, I'm like,
I mean, at this point in the movie, she's seen a lot.
Like, she has.
So, like, as the noise happens, if she screamed, then I'd be like, okay, that makes sense. But, like, taking it all in and then being, like, letting out a big scream, like, that did seem, like, kind of just odd to me.
Yeah, it seemed like a very odd choice to segue to the next scene.
Yeah, where she's just in the back
of a squad car.
Rightfully so at this point.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All signs point to yes, you know, because it's like, okay, it's in your house, it's in your attic, and, like, at that point in time, you're like, okay, I think we figured it out. This movie has just way too many opportunities that are kind of squashed, if you will. It's like when you play a video game that has, like, a speed run, or like when you play, I'm pretty sure you've played Cuphead.
Yes.
So, like, when you're playing Cuphead and you have to defeat the bosses and you lose at that, like, at that one point, and you look at the bar meter and you're like, you were like half a centimeter from that flag. Yeah, like, I was right there. It feels like that, like, this scene is set up to where it's giving a great homage, and then at that last second, it is kind of squashed. The moment is kind of ruined by something that is nonsensical to make the transition, or even kind of cap off the end of that scene. So I really did want this film to work. Mm-hmm. Mind you, set-wise, design-wise, cinematography-wise, this movie's beautiful. With the dark, rich colors that this film uses and the unique color palettes, like the house obviously has like this brown, green, beige kind of color palette, this warm color palette that makes it feel like it's a home.
Mm-hmm.
Which you kind of get the sense this is something that she wanted because she's wanted a home for herself because she grew up being adopted. wanting to create that home for herself. There's this. Then you get like some of the scenes, like even the scene where the bright red sign outside the guy's window. For some reason, that just seemed cool to me, like just the way that room was set up.
I'm sure it's a horrible room to sleep in if you're light sensitive.
Oh, absolutely. but it was cool to watch.
Yeah.
The effects in this movie. Like the meltaway scenes where she finds herself, like that was cool.
Yeah, the shifting reality, I kind of really did like. Whenever it's like, oh, something's about to happen, and then like, just the whole like her whole world just starts shifting and like melting away.
Yeah, she's like in this. She's like in this paralyzed state where she can't move in those moments, and it's like, it's almost like sleep paralysis. Where I've heard studies where people feel like they're awake, but they can't move, and they feel trapped and almost like this deep despair of utter helplessness. And it makes you wonder, like, you're laying in bed feeling this. Can you imagine having that same sense but while watching somebody get murdered? And it adds to that sense of fear, but it also has to have you have that logic while you're watching this scene to be like, oh, sleep paralysis, demons, bad things happening. Like, you have to connect the dots on yourself.
Yeah.
But the visual elements of this film were superb. If that police station was anything other than
the police station where it all kind of just falls off a little bit. Because everything else is great. Yeah. It's just that police station where like you just notice things that look hella off.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You're like, this jail cell is too big for all these people, or this interrogation room is just super dark. Like, I didn't even find a door while they were in there.
Like, there's one part where like someone has their lights on outside, so you just see red and blue lights through the window.
That's what I was saying.
Like, it's like the place doesn't look enough like a police department, so they're like, okay, let's just have that going on, so that way people know it's a police department or whatever.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And mind you, aesthetically, if this wasn't a horror movie, if this was like some kind of crazy action movie or whatever, I think that's the trade-off. I would believe that was a police station if this was like some bombastic action movie. Like, if this was, it's kind of the understanding that you get when you're watching things like Last Action Hero,
mm-hmm.
where the police station in Last Action Hero is redonkulous. But you obviously know this is in a movie. This movie, as much as it's trying to instill that fear, you still have to have a sense of groundedness to make that connection with people who are watching. Because if this is just a crazy horror film, just a fantastical horror film, then there should be elements that you can take to like to the nth degree. Kind of like, for instance, Poltergeist. Poltergeist, the movie itself is bombastic. Have you seen Poltergeist?
I don't think so.
So the whole premise of Poltergeist is this man and his family move into this home. He works for this housing development company, and they had to move some graves to make room for the development. What they didn't know was that they didn't move the bodies, just the headstones, and so the sacred Indian burial ground trope is used. And crazy stuff starts happening in his house. So they go to the bombastic idea of bringing in a psychic or whatever she may be called, and a paranormal investigator team to try to retrieve their daughter who has been taken by these paranormal entities. To the point to where they have to tie a rope to somebody as they hurl themselves into this porthole of psychic energy. Yeah, you're looking at me, and this is, but mind you, you're following the trend of this movie, and it's all bombastic. It's all ridiculous. It's all crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So they use crazy means to fix the solution. This movie has bombastic elements, but it tries to use normal logic to try to solve or have resolution for the film. And obviously, you can have like realistic, logical resolutions for this movie. So it just kind of makes you teeter on that. I wanna kind of like what's going on, but then, you know, I mean, it would just make more sense if you found out, like, you know, Kakoa Shaw actually was like a shaman from back in the day, and he could do this and this and that and whatever, you know, or a bio exorcist or Beetlejuice comes out of nowhere. I don't know. Something happens where you're like, oh, okay, this is on par with the like heightened level of chaos in this movie. But you're keeping it down at like a level 2. This movie's at like a level 8. And in order to beat the bad guy in this movie, you got to be at a level 9. But everybody's playing at like a level 2, level 3, you know?
Yeah, I think it's that mismatch in like normal logic and like how crazy the story can get at some points. That's the real problem with this movie. Especially with the ending, where something is left in a very precarious state, and then the solution is deal with it when it comes. Like,
yeah,
like, what do you mean? Like, yeah. You can't, like, this cannot be allowed.
No, like, if you know this thing is, if you know that this particular situation is going to create havoc, there's no logical sense to say, eh, it's someone else's problem. Like, you can't have that mindset with something like this.
Because, like, you know, like, she wanted to have a family, and she goes out and does that, and then, like, in 20 years, Gabriel comes back or whatever to, like, terrorize, like...
Or even worse, I half, and mind you, this doesn't happen in the movie, but I half expected that she was, like, everything was gonna get resolved before the third act. She was gonna find herself, like, because they kept doing that time jump thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I get it. The 1993, the beginning is like, okay, you're setting the stage. But then it does the present day, and then you're like, okay. And then it is like 3 weeks later, or does however much time later. And it's like, I expected them to keep doing that even to the end. And I expected there to be like a 5-year jump at the end, and she was actually pregnant. And when she gives birth, it's Gabriel. Like, I have expected that to happen to like some extent. But it just, the way this movie, and even the way this movie wraps up, you're like, where the heck are they going to go now? Like, none of this made sense. You can't just leave a movie there. Like, I get it. It's like fuel for Malignant Part 2, you know, the leech on her leg. Like, I don't know, like, how they're going to go with that, you know, but it's just, there's just a lot to that's still unaccounted for.
Yeah, I think they too heavily set up for a sequel to this movie versus like finishing the movie that was in front of them.
Yeah, I 100% believe that. And I feel like, yeah, without a doubt, because I felt like there was much more that could have been done to polish this and refine it, especially since they weren't going to release it in 2020. So it's like, okay, maybe we should take this time to go back.
Nah, it's fine.
Aside from what we've mentioned, did you have any other highlights or issues in this movie?
No, I think we've talked about my core problems with this movie.
There's a lot. Like, I wouldn't be surprised, and just because it's in kind of James Wan's wheelhouse to do this, I wouldn't be surprised if they do like a Malignant prequel, like Madison's time while she was in the hospital, like something to that effect, or even the prequel of like of how her mom had gotten pregnant or the person she met. Like, I feel like that's the direction it's going to go to. I feel like because it's got James Wan attached to it, I feel like there's like a 90% chance that it's going to get a sequel. But I don't know.
Well, they have to find something for people to only half watch because HBO Max broke.
Seriously. other thoughts that I had about this film, like, I like the music choices. I like the way they kind of set up certain scenes. The music you were listening to, the Where's My Mind cover, that was one of the elements. Like, in that vein, it was very synthy. It was very much like the rest of the soundtrack is very synthy. It's very, you know, high note strings and very reminiscent, like I said, to the 80s horror genre. So it's between the music, the horror beats, and some of the dialogue, you know, it felt like James Wan was trying to do some sense of an homage to 80s horror or classic horror. But, you know, whether or not he hit or miss, it's still left to be debated. Like, I would probably have to see it a second time begrudgingly to really see how the movie was meant to be received as a whole. Now that I've seen it one time, now I can pay attention to all the little details, you know. But that does bring me to our final discussion question for the table. And that is, do films like this, movies like Malignant and, you know, other elements like Stranger Things as well, who does the homages as well, do films like this hurt or help, like, movies of that drama of the past, of that genre of the past?
Okay, well, I guess that really depends on what we're talking about, because Stranger Things does it in a way I feel is better than this movie does.
But for how long, though, can you keep that particular trope going? Like, you look at Stranger Things, and they're in season 4 now.
Yeah, 5's coming out next year, I think.
Is it 5 that's coming up?
Yeah, 5's coming up.
So that's when they dropped the teaser for.
Yeah.
So even in that element, like, the one good thing about Stranger Things is that it's moving with the era. So this Stranger Things looks like it's kind of dealing with more late 80s, maybe 90s-ish horror type films, or even just the homage back to that time with the era and everything else. And so luckily it's moving with the times, but even then it's coming out of that trope to a sense. Yet Netflix seems to kind of vibe off of things like that. Like, take a look at that Aurel Stein's horror movie that he did on Netflix, that three-parter.
Fear Street.
Yeah. Those are like hardcore homages to a time. But then, like, movies like this where they create instances that kind of reminisce towards that. Do you think movies like this particular one, where they're kind of hit or miss on the homages, do you think they hurt or do you think they help those of the past?
I guess it really depends on who's viewing it. Because if it's a person who, like, gets the reference, like, I can see this being, like, kind of like, oh, hey, yeah, it's kind of like this. Like, I can see that being a helpful thing. But for someone like me, who might not get every 80s horror movie's reference because I haven't seen as many, they're just going to fly over my head and not hurt, but also not help, you know?
And so that's a good perspective to have, actually, now that I think about it, because having that in mind, not knowing a lot of the references and not knowing a lot of the callbacks, if you will, any of those scenes seem like now that you have heard some of them, does it add value to it or does it still make it seem as though it falls short of making sense?
Still doesn't make sense because I don't know, like, specifically, you know, the thing it's, like, referring to. Because, like, if I, like, had seen it, I'd be like, oh yeah, I get it now. But, like, without it, it's kind of just like like that whole scene with her, like, I'm adopted, like it's like, okay.
That was almost like an homage to, like, 80s soap opera. Like, there's an episode of Dallas all of a sudden in Malignant or something.
Yeah, like, that was one of the things where I'm like, is this supposed to be talking about something that I don't know? Because, like, I feel like there's, like, a thing here that I don't quite get, you know?
Yeah. I would have to say, like, things like this, as a fan, as an avid fan of all things horror, and especially classic horror, I feel like, to an extent, it doesn't do anything to educate. And mind you, that seems like a very shallow statement to say, because it's like, oh, well, not every movie's job is to educate, blah, blah, blah. No, but then at the same time, if you're going to put things like that in a horror movie and hope that the masses come out to see it, you have to give some type of credence, or at least in marketing, one of the things that you learn about marketing is you have to market to the lowest common denominator. That's who your target audience is. You have a large demographic. You have everybody who you're trying to reach. But at the same time, you have to recognize that if you want the most efficiency for your campaign or whatever it is, you have to market to your lowest common denominator. If not, then all of a sudden, all you're doing is just hitting everybody at that top and missing everything underneath it. And that's a whole, it's kind of like a reverse pyramid, but it's like that's a whole left part of, like, bottom part of that pyramid that could be more revenue. And in the same function with this movie, I feel like it hurts more so than helps in creating those connections, because you think about it, and mind you, I know I bring this up way too often, but going back to things like in the DC movies, the DCEU.
Well, they are on HBO Max. So
you look at like a BVS, and one of the things that you and I used to hear all the time is, oh, no, you don't understand, because this scene is, referencing to this animated film, and this scene is doing this to that movie, and you have to be like a fan to know this and that, and the difference between these things and those things. And it's like, yeah, but if I'm not one of those people, then all those scenes don't really make sense to me, and I have less respect for those scenes than you do, because it means nothing to me.
That's a great point, actually. I think what we should really land on is, like, when you're making homages and stuff, I think it really does best for, like, it to be a wink to the people who get it, but not mandatory for understanding it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think movies like this, and I say movies like this specifically not just to target James Wan and what he's created, because he did make a great effort. The movie is, if HBO Max works, the movie is fun to watch in certain instances if you're not looking to take a movie seriously. It's just like a straight up slasher that if you turn your brain off, you're like, all right, just let it happen. Like, you know, then it is, you know, but the thing is that our job here is to dissect and really kind of get into the meat of a lot of these types of movies. And I think one of the things that this movie kind of misses the mark on is conveying that love that or that inspiration that came out of movies during that era, that bygone era. And it creates this hollow intention for people who are watching it and are trying to really get the most out of each scene. And when you're in a room of 10 people and only 2 people get the nod, or 3 people get the quote, or a few people get that, you know, that reference, then you're leaving a whole large bit of that demographic just in the dark. And it creates conversations. Yeah. You'll always get people like, oh, well, you don't get it. Just they're making, you know, conversations. They're making people have conversations about it. But here's the thing. You can't have a conversation about something if people don't get it.
Right.
Like it would be more of a lecture. It'd be like, I'm telling you about this.
Okay.
Like, you know, so I think it does hurt more so, but I think at the same time, I think we're in an era where Hollywood is an ever moving and ever learning industry, where if they didn't get it this first time, I'm pretty sure they're going to be able to figure out how to get it the next time around. And here's to hoping that, you know what, the next one, they you know, hone their craft, you know, better, and they're able to nail it much stronger. So wrapping this whole thing up, I'm going to go ahead and start with you, Spence. Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Man, I did not think about pass or failing for some reason. Yeah, well, even though it did sell you this, I was just more like, what do I want to rate this? You know, I think I'm going to have to fail this movie, because it's this just that mishmash of, like, logic that we were talking about earlier, that it's really jarring and it throws you out of the movie, like, a bit too often for my liking, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to fail it on that. And really, like, I feel like it's this mishmash of logic that, you know, I've ignored horror movies for so long.
Yeah.
So I kind of don't want to see, like if they did another one, like, I would hope that it, like, matched what it was trying to do. Like, if you're going to have it be super crazy, just be super crazy, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I'm going to land on, like, giving it a 2.
2 out of 5?
Yeah. It had some good ideas, and, like, as we said, Cinematography 3 is great, but, like, the story had some real problems for me.
Yeah. I think, here's the thing, separating, in my mind, I would love to separate the story from the actual film.
Oh, yeah, one of those is really good.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to put it. It would be an easy question for me to answer if that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, we are reviewing the movie as a whole, and part of that whole piece is combining the story with the execution of the acting and everything and the direction and everything else. So I think I'm going to have to agree with you. I think I'm going to have to fail the story. The movie fails in terms of the story element and the cohesiveness of everything that happens. And it pains me to say, because it's a James Wan film, and it's like, it could have been great. But yeah, unfortunately, this is what we have. So it does fail in terms of as a movie. In terms of Monocles, I think I'm going to give it a 2.5. And most of that is because I like the idea of the story. I like the idea of the main villain, the main antagonist. I just don't like the way it's executed on. And that, for me, really does put the film in an awkward place, where I wish the movie had more time to be polished. I wish the movie had more time to be the story element to be fleshed out. I wish the movie had more time to just be what it was meant to be, and that is one of James Wan's masterpieces, because you hear him talk about it and he's thrilled to the moon to do this movie. Or to have had done this movie.
I can kind of get that. There's certain things in this movie he should be proud of.
Oh, absolutely. So, but yeah, I'm going to have to give it a 2.5. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Check out the film yourself. If you have HBO Max or you want to hit up your local theater, by all means, check it out. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers. Or on our Twitter or Instagram page at Filmlosophy101. I'd love to hear your thoughts, because if you saw something different than we did, I'd like to hear that perspective. Maybe there's something that we're not seeing. Maybe there's like a whole side of this is like, oh, you don't get it. James Wan once had a conjoined twin. Like, I don't know. Like, who knows?
I hope this is not a biography. Not a biography.
This is his early years. This is why you didn't hear about him before. Yeah, we want to know your thoughts. And what your thoughts are on the show. You know, drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. Also, check us out on everywhere you can hear podcasts. That's Google Play, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora. Anywhere where you hear podcasts, you can find us there. Drop us a like, follow us there, listen to our episodes. Actually, if you can, give us a 5-star review. We'd love to hear that. We're looking to see if we can find some 5-star reviews so that way we can give you a shout out on the podcast. That'd be an easy thing to do, and I'll have Spencer do it in the opening credits. But yeah, this was a very interesting movie to talk about, and it's one of those opportunities where you are hoping for the best, not really preparing for the worst, and when you get it, you're like, we got to talk about this.
Actually, no, I was like, oh, this is going to be easy to talk about for me.
Well, good to know you're easily able to bash the illustrious James Wan.
Yep.
Yeah, like I said, if this is a very unique movie, and I'm more than willing to give it another shot to check it out, but I think this is where I'm going to stand for how I see the film, honestly. So, but yeah. This wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. So, from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.